I miss you.
What's good, internet? It's August 4th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 85. That's like one of those numbers that feels important in a way. Oh, I know. It's because I was born in 1985. I was going to say, it's ineffable. Why does 85 feel so important
in my
heart? I
was so sad that I missed 84 because that's my birth year.
Oh, you missed 84.
And I wanted to be all like, 84 is the best. We're the only year that's also a piece of major literature in the West. I'm just saying.
Okay.
The real world 1984 turned out way better than the book. Like, it was not a faithful adaptation, but...
But, all said,
you know.
I'm Austin Walker, joining me, Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
And, of course, Rob Zachney. I have to leave in, like, 10 minutes, but I wanted to be here for the intro because I forgot to talk about a thing on Monday that I played over the weekend, and I kicked myself for it all week.
What did you play?
I played the new Titanfall 2 co-op mode. See, the reason I was upset is because I love giant robots a lot.
Yeah.
And they brought back Frontier Defense.
Is there a term for that? Like robotophile?
I don't make love to giant robots. I don't have enough.
All right.
That'd be mechaphilia. Thank you.
Mechaphilia.
I have a fraternal love for robots. I'm kin to them. So
yes,
like, I'm not saying, again, it's not a judgment thing. I'm not saying you couldn't fuck a robot.
We've done this one over
But also,
and over.
To be clear, not all robots fuck.
Have you?
Titanfall 2 has a new mode. It's called Frontier Defense, and it is like a co-op horde mode. There you defend like a point on the map from hordes of robots coming in. And it's really cool because it gives a different robot fantasy than the main game does, because it's just like hordes of big robots are coming in along with like other little guys. And it's like you plus up to, I want to say it's four. I think it's a team of five is what I want to say. I think it's a team of five. Okay. Maybe it's a team of four. I think it's a team of four. Defending a single point. And it just opens up the game to in a different way, because there's all sorts of kind of like you need to take advantage of the abilities that your mechs have, that your Titans have, in a lot more tactical ways, because – not more tactical, in a different type of tactical way, because there's a difference between like I'm going to win this encounter and if I fail, I'll respawn, and – we need to stem this tide that's coming. And it's an endurance activity in a sense, because it's just like they're just going to keep coming. And like I need to be survivable in a way that you don't normally have to be in Titanfall, which is interesting. Like the Titans really feel like they matter in this mode because you're so much more effective with them, because it's just like, oh, 20 other enemy Titans are coming. I'm really into it.
It really forces you to leverage as well. The fact the Titan is semi-automated.
Right, totally.
So, like, you really have to choose your moment. Like, am I more valuable being another gun out in the field and having my Titan under AI control, or should I be in the cockpit, like, firing off the special abilities?
Totally.
Where should I be at this moment? So there is kind of a cool, tactical element to this. It's an interesting choice that I think is – it's a dynamic that's not present in a lot of other horde modes, I would say, which I really dig here.
Right. Well, the other thing that came with this for me was this is the first time I kind of dipped back in to Titanfall since any of the DLC had released. And that means that there was a Titan that I had never played as called Monarch that actually brought back a lot of stuff that I had missed from the original Titans in an abstract sense, which is interesting. So they changed the Titans in Titanfall 2 in a couple of big ways. They made them way more fragile. In the first game, the Titans always had a shield that would recharge when you're outside of combat, sort of like Master Chief does in Halo. And so you were always guaranteed to have a little bit of sorry, we lost Rob for a second there. A little bit of armor,
something
basically.
Back.
You always
had
at least some small amount of armor that we'd come back to if you could get into a safe spot. And then they didn't have that in Titanfall 2. Instead, you had to basically steal something from another Titan on foot to give yourself a recharge. And that just meant that they felt paper thin to me. Like I still liked that game a whole bunch, but the versions of Titans that I loved from the first game just weren't there. But Monarch is built around healing yourself and giving yourself more shields.
My kind of robot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She has like a – also it's like – the robots are all
lady
gendered.
Robot?
It's a lady AI inside
the
robot.
That's
so
cool.
So her name
cool.
Her name is Monarch, and she has she has like a kind of assault rifle, a rocket launcher thing, and then also this laser beam that just kind of zaps energy away from an enemy Titan or anything robotic to recharge her shields.
Oh, I like that.
Which is really cool. Yeah. Because suddenly it makes this thing of just like, all right, I'm going to hide behind this building. I'm going to duck out. I'm going to take some shots. I'm going to take some damage. And I'm going to recharge my attack or my shields and then duck back again. And then she has a third ability that lets you recharge all of your abilities instantly. So you can kind of like get – it's like a lot of like I'm going to burst in, do a ton of damage, heal, bounce out. And it produces this effect that I've always loved in – all things mecha, which is like the rhythm of moving around city streets, kind of pulling out of cover to have an exchange and then ducking back away to kind of lick your wounds. That's always been
the
part
30 of 30 seconds of fun kind of
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. It's
yeah,
always
for sure.
been the like fantasy inside of this genre for me has always been that like brief, intense engagement, then like retreat and repair, which is why I like the first Titanfall so much in terms of competitive multiplayer. And the coolest thing about the new Titan, and this is not even a new Titan, she's been out since like April or something. I'm just finally getting to play as her.
New to you.
New to me. is that instead of having a super move, like all the other Titans have Overwatch-style supers, including literally there's one that's just like the Pharah jumps up in the air and shoots down a bunch of missiles. Like they're very – one of them is just like the Soldier 76 like visor that like just auto-targets for you. But instead of that, Monarch has a thing where when you get to the first level, you get your meter fills up and you use it and you just get a permanent upgrade for that life of Monarch. And then it refills again and then you get a second tier of an upgrade and you do it a third time. And then all of a sudden, like, it changes how you play the game. So by default, that, like, laser that heals you just heals you. But you can get an upgrade if you power up and use your super that lets you heal your friends. And I was like, oh, wow, ooh. I'm playing as, like, a healer in this game about giant robots. And in Frontier Defense, that just felt dope because it's like there's this onslaught of enemies. I can see my friends' mechs are, like, the smoke is coming off of them, and now I can give them shields. You can't heal them, but you can give them shields. And that just felt made me feel really good. So that's the thing I wanted to talk about last week and didn't get around to. Rob, we should play some of this game for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, playing this mode, like, really hammered home how rusty I've gotten at this game. So, like, let me have a few sessions to recover my mech skills.
Mm-hmm.
And
mech legs.
Then we'll go.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's try to maybe do it next week. That would actually be fantastic. Before I leave, because I do have to leave in, like, 3 more minutes, I also just dipped into Heat Signature, which is the next game from Tom Francis, who made Gunpoint? Gunbound? Gunpoint.
I'll look at the thing.
Gunpoint.
Gunpoint. Which is super good. Gunpoint was super good and was a kind of cyberpunk, tech-noir, puzzle platformer, like, action game. Puzzle platformer is probably what it really is, I think, at the heart. Danielle told me she didn't play it today.
Not yet.
And I realized, like, it's such a Danielle game, Rob. Like, it's a charming puzzle platformer set in a cyberpunk world of, like...
And also, it's Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze. It's so weird.
Oh, my God, it's everything. And it's starring cyborg lesbians, too, right? Like, they're in there.
There is definitely...
All I remember is just one little dude. Like,
you play as a little dude, but, like, there's definitely some intrigue, and I don't...
All right.
There's at least one rad cyborg lady in that game.
Counts.
I don't know what her sexual orientation is.
We can, you know,
it might
cannon.
Come up. I don't remember if it does or not.
Sounds good.
And so I've been playing his next game, which is in like a closed beta, but I've talked to him and he says no NDA. I can talk about this game. I might try to stream some of it this weekend. It's called Heat Signature, and you play kind of like an intergalactic fixer, like hitman slash. Like rescue operator slash, thief who goes on missions. And it's this top-down perspective in which you kind of – it's sort of like, all right, here's like the very basic pitch. What if Hotline Miami took place in a galaxy that had a bunch of ships going around in it, that had a bunch of factions that were vying for control, that underneath that layer you were just a single operative? And you would get a mission from a board that said like – go recover the Coriolis object, which is like there's a ton of like amazing names in this game.
Coriolis object, that's definitely like a Star Trek episode.
Yes.
Like that's very
the
good.
The Coriolis object, yeah. I played as a character named God, what was her name? Because I'm going to get to this one little bit of a story with this before I leave because it was so good. Her name was Paloma something. So it's a randomly generated. There's a random name generator in it that does something that I. I'm often very suspect of random name generators in games. Yeah. I like them. I like random generation. I like proc gen. But I have a very specific ear for a certain style of name, and I've seen lots of people try to evoke that style of name with procedural generation and not get it. Yeah. Heat Signature totally gets it. And so, like, I don't know. It's just, it's again, the pitch is like, it's Hotline Miami in that it's a top-down game about entering contested spaces and then getting into fights and then, like, high stakes, basically. Like, one hit, you're knocked out or you're bleeding and it's bad. And I'm just gonna tell you the story of, really quickly, because I have to go.
I love it.
Of Paloma, I need to remember what her last name
Chrysalis.
Is. No, I don't. I have it written down. God damn it. I don't think I have it.
Paloma Mechhead.
It wasn't Mechhead. Here's another really good one, though. Was Canopus Karen.
Oh.
And it's just like, oh, I need that alliteration in my life.
Yeah.
All right. So I had a mission to go and just, like, rescue someone who'd been kidnapped by this, like, security company called Offworld Security. And so I bust in and I go to into Offworld Security's, like, spaceship. And there's, like, 12 guards. And the way the game works is there's a bunch of tools. There's weapons. Like, you throw wrenches. It has a Hitman feeling, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to hit you with a wrench. But it also has science fiction stuff, like, I'm going to swap places with you. And I can do that once before I go back to home base and recharge it. Or I can knock you out and take your shotgun, your concussive shotgun, and then knock out everybody else in the room. Lots of, like, quick thinking, how do I solve this combat puzzle? And you can also pause at any time, which helps a lot. And go into slow motion and, like, all of that stuff is there. So I end up in a situation where I need to get this person off the ship. And a thing I've done before in that situation is kill everybody, get them, go back to my space pod that I've kind of docked onto the back of their spaceship in this kind of top-down open world map, run them back to the pod, get out. Like, that's cool. But I didn't have the time to do that because the alarm was on. Oh, and no. So I did another thing that I'd done before, which is, like, I know what I'll do. I'll blast a hole out the window of the spaceship, fly us both out into space where we'll be suffocating, but I can remote control my pod to come pick us up before we die. Like, that's the sort of game it is. It's like, oh, that's incredible. And so here's the thing that, like, got me. This is where I was like, oh, this game's good, actually, is I throw the person out. I'm about to go out into the space pod, but before I do, the alarm finishes. And I thought that just meant – I'd seen a pop-up that says, oh, you get captured if the alarm finishes. And I thought in my mind that was just like, oh, the security guards are going to flood in and I'll have to fight my way out or something. The alarm is actually a countdown to how close the ship you're on is back to one of its bases. And so it goes back into its base and my character is just – there now, and it's like, oh, Paloma's captured. And then it said, like, oh, but now you're gonna play as her father, and if you want, you can, your personal mission in life can be to go rescue her, and you have to build up the funds to, like, get the information about where she's being held captive, and you do that by doing missions, because every player character, it's like a Rogue Legacy, like, roguelike light style thing where everybody has by default a mission that's like, hey, you really want to go get revenge on the person. You have a friend who was tortured by this mercenary company. You want revenge on them. Or like, oh, you're trying to find this lost, you know, object of great value. And so you always have this thing of like, I'm trying to raise money to get information so I can go do that mission. But the fact that it gave me a character who was that player's father to be like, oh, that's my personal mission. And it said, like, if you rescue her, you get to play as her again and get all of her cool toys back that she was captured with. And then her father, whose name was like Jamina or something, got
was Paloma Sycamore.
Paloma Sycamore.
Somebody said it, not me.
I don't know who's in the chat.
Thank you.
It was Paloma Sycamore. That's totally right. And then, well, the thing, and then, so her father was
Fancy Rectangles.
Thank you, Fancy Rectangles. I don't know how you knew that. That's
Jack. Apparently,
Jack may have tweeted about it. Jack DeKeet. Yeah, yeah. Well, the reason I know that is Jack DeKeet fucking booted up his game, and he found a character that said, oh, Jamina, or no, that said Paloma Sycamore has been kidnapped. He, on a different version of this game, on his Steam account, got a mission to rescue my character. And I was like, oh, fuck.
This game is
really good. Like,
that's awesome.
That's such a small little thing. And that's like such a great bit of asymmetrical connection that makes you feel like you're inhabiting the same world, even though the universe is randomly generated. Like, I can hit a button that says generate me a new a new galaxy to explore with new factions to fight and all of that. And I don't know. It's just like it's in beta now. It doesn't have a release date. Sure. My hope is that it'll be in this. My hope is this year, because it's like in a state now where the combat puzzles are great. The proc gen is producing interesting experiences. The tools that you have at your disposal make me feel really clever when you use them well and really goofy when you use them poorly. Like the time I blew off a side of a space station. There was a guy who I was trying to kill, and he had bodyguards, and I shot a bodyguard, but I didn't realize the bodyguard had on, like, an explosive vest. And so it just took the whole side of the spaceship we were on off. And I'm just floating through space again. There's a lot of just, like, I turn the corner, I make a decision, now I'm in space. But in a way that's very comedic and very, like, it's played for laughs in a way that I did not anticipate. Anyway, sorry I had to rush through that. I've been here for 15 minutes instead of 10. I have to run. I'm going to tag in if I can.
Good thing.
Tag in Natalie. Natalie just gave me a thumbs up as if to say, yes, tag me in.
Sure.
All right.
Natalie will be here.
Okay.
Talking and also probably bringing Rob back every because 5 minutes.
Yeah. Today has been a day. This week has been a week. I wish I had more time. I'm going to go run to this meeting for this documentary thing. So
that sounds all really right. Good.
Tag. We've actually.
Tag. Oh, literal tag.
Literal tag.
In case you didn't see it.
Let the referee know.
All right.
Thank you. I'm going to grab my stuff.
Just moving. Don't worry. It's moving. That's how we do things. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, Natalie. Natalie to the podcast. Natalie's been here before.
I've been here once.
You were here once.
I've been here one time.
Yeah. Well, now it's two times.
Now I'm on my second time here.
Well, this is clearly the hot seat where people talk about the game that they're playing. Do you want to talk about a little PUBG even you just played a little bit of?
So I've had PUBG downloaded, installed on my computer for maybe a month.
Good.
And I opened it once and it was like the character creation and I was like, I'm not ready for this. I don't know. Like,
this is a commitment.
I wasn't ready to define myself in PUBG yet. I just was like, I don't know how I want to present myself. I don't know if I want to be one of the nudists. I don't know if I want to be one of the edgelords. I don't know if I don't know who I want to be in this Battlegrounds world. So I've just been avoiding it. And then today we had to do some stream tests. And so I was playing, I was like made to play PUBG.
As you've been made to be on the podcast.
As I've been made to be on the podcast right now. And basically, I got to like top 30. And I jumped off the plane into the woods, into the wilderness, into nowhere zone, because I was just like, oh, I just want to, you know, like speed up my, like get a lot of frame rate action so I can see how like the stream's doing. And so I just jumped off into nowhere land. I found a gun. I found a few ammo. And was just running around and really just lasted a really long time and then handed it over to Austin, who took over after, like...
Made it to, like, six?
Made it to six, which was insane.
Yeah,
so
that was pretty good, actually.
It was a very good run, and we were, like, streaming it on our test account, and we were like, if this is a chicken dinner, we just streamed it for no one. Like, no one will ever see this, but... Yeah, it was pretty fun. I enjoyed it. I while I was playing it, I was like, oh, when I go home, I finally hit that obstacle, or I've finally been able to overcome that obstacle. So when I go home, I'm definitely going to play a lot.
All right. So are you going to be a nudist, an edgelord nudist, an edgelord with clothes? And like,
I like the idea. Well, the new clothes are sick. Like,
ooh,
sick. So I'm really excited about these new. Outfit options, but I think my ideal is like a long edgelord cape and then underpants, and that's all I can really figure out.
That's good. That's like a very Marvel way of doing it.
Yeah, you know,
like something very form fitting in a cape.
In a cape, it's, basically.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Rob, I don't know if it involves capes or underwear, but I know that you have been playing. Let me see.
I got notes here. You've been playing
that's
stuff.
Not been updated. I don't know.
It's not been updated. Yeah, that's why I looked. I was like, oh, let me do a quick switcheroo here. Yep, I haven't seen this one in a week.
Don't even try to make this smooth because I'm going to drop out in like probably 35 seconds.
For sure.
Like,
yeah, it's gonna
this
happen.
This is the cursed pod.
It's a little cursed like, today.
It's a little nerve wracking, right? It's, yeah. There we go.
I've got you. Don't. Oh.
And it happened. Well, he's gonna come back. Because
so
Natalie's got
yeah,
it.
As I was saying, I think that's pretty much how I solve video games and save the industry. So.
Oh, wow.
And but world anyway. Hunger at the same time.
Pretty much.
And peace.
So. Oh, wow.
And peace.
Wow. Rob, that was brilliant. I'm really glad that you were here with us for that beautiful description. That was incredible.
Memorable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, this week, I guess I've been playing a lot of Kingdoms and Castles.
Ah.
Which is a little baby city builder, a little bit tower defense, a little bit city builder. There's not a whole lot to it, which eventually becomes its problem. Like, I'm currently obsessively playing it, but like to no end. Like, it's a solved game. Nothing interesting is happening anymore. I'm just making a population count go like higher and higher, and like how happy can I make these little fuckers? And the answer is like pretty happy. But the thing that's frustrating me is the game keeps telling me, like, they keep having these waves of unhappiness because like Vikings keep attacking and like I keep failing to fend them off. But I'm like, that's bullshit. Like, I am totally fending off these attacks. So in Kingdoms and Castles, basically, you're building a really simple, like, medieval city. Like, your people have very simple needs. They just need, like, food, charcoal. I guess they love to grill out or something.
Yeah, big,
and heat their houses.
Big grillers. Medieval grillers. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Just all La Plancha all the time. Anyway, so, you know, they want their food, they want their charcoal, and they want to not be carried off by Vikings.
Okay.
Which is
fair.
Pretty much what any of us can want. Yeah. And every time the Vikings show up, and they show up like every 5 to 10 minutes, it's Vikings or a dragon. Dragons suck. Dragons like fly in, and they just get like shot with arrows, and they die. It's like every dragon basically is Smaug, where it just like shows up and is like, haha, I'm a big dragon. And then someone has the novel of idea of like, hey, what if I fuck this dragon up with a bow and arrow? And it totally works. So the dragons aren't a problem, but the Vikings are. And while the Viking soldiers can be fended off with walls, they can't get through walls, they eventually show up with ogres, which, historically accurate.
Right, right.
Like, this is why the Vikings were the terror of Northern Europe for so long. The ogres.
The ogres, yeah.
So they show up with ogres, and the ogres, like, punch down your walls. And they take a lot of killing. But at this point, I have got so many walls, they're so heavily defended that, like, nothing is getting through. But somehow my people keep thinking that the Vikings are, like, successfully attacking and they're not being kept safe. And I'm like, I remember. Like, we all know what unsafe looks like. Like, I've seen this city burn, like, five or six times. Like, we've been through that together. And now, like, one orchard catches fire, and everyone's like, oh, the Viking attacks are just out of control. I don't know, maybe it's a really insightful metaphor for the war on terror and security state. Could be.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm just playing to see if I can get, like, more people and get them to just recognize that, like, they are safe. They're being left in peace. I've done that for them.
Yeah. They'll be okay. Now, I'm not going to lie, when you first said, oh, it's a city builder, you were first describing this, I thought just a Sim City or a City Skylines, and then it was modern when you said Vikings. I was like, oh, right, the modern Vikings that come in with their ogres and dragons, and I just sort of pictured people in, like, little suits and ties.
In the metropolitan city.
Exactly, being, like, looted.
And Shrek is hanging out.
It was good. Yeah, Shrek, definitely part of this image that I had. It was pretty good. I like that a lot. Anything else that you've been playing, enjoying, having a good time with?
I've gone back to Prey.
Yes! I did that too, actually, this week. Go on.
I'm in the final sprint. Like, at this point, I've got to scan a whole bunch of coral for Alex.
Yes.
And then I've got the keys to the escape thingy and the keys to the reactor thingy.
Okay.
So I feel like there's probably some big endgame decisions coming up soon.
Yeah.
But we're not there yet.
So did you finish it before, or is this your first time finishing the game?
This is my first time finishing it. I just got sidetracked. Remember... I think what kind of derailed my game was I was really feeling it, and there was that dude hiding in the duck, that dead body.
Yeah.
That, what's his name?
I forget, but I super remember Gary? That guy.
Yeah.
He
sucked.
He's just in case you didn't know, there's a zero-G sequence where there's a dude hiding around, like, a pipe that you don't know you can get over.
Yeah.
And it sucks, and it's, like, a whole quest. And, like, if you do it late enough into the game, you've already got the thing that you would have gotten from him anyway. Yeah. So if you spend an hour getting, you know, irradiated and trying to find your way around this pipe, it's just, it's a bad scene.
It's nonsense.
A little bit of a bad scene. So,
hey, Rob.
Anyway, so now... I've pretty much got everything, and everything's become, like, trivially difficult. Like, the closest call I've had was I got stuck in some geometry in the nightclub. Like, I went up into the lighting rig, and I got stuck. And my last save was, like, 15 minutes earlier.
Uh-oh.
And so I had to, like, burn my precious neuromods on a shape-shifting ability I didn't even want. So I could, like, I had to drop my pistol on the ground so I could look at it. And then I could stare at the pistol and be like, I shall not become the pistol. And I shapeshifted into a gun. And then I sort of like Beauty and the Beast, like, hopped out of the lighting rig and onto the ground. And that was the biggest challenge I've had of late. At this point, like, there's this monster you encounter called the Nightmare.
Oh, yes.
That, like, it's just a, like, all the enemy design, it's just like, what if a big-ass oil monster was, like, hunting you in a space station? And, like, the Nightmare is, like, really, like, no, it's really big, you guys, but it's huge. And at this point, like, it shows up, and I have the special magic weapon that just, like, completely trashes it. So all the, like, the cool game stuff of Prey is kind of at an end, the stuff that I think you and I really loved in those early hours. And now I'm just kind of, like, playing it for the world and the atmosphere, which is still great, but... it couldn't sustain that, like, balance it had in the opening hours.
There's some stuff ahead, the semi-scripted encounters and such that you'll probably... I at least sort of rekindled my love of you know, figuring out the puzzle of how to get through a particular encounter. I was going to say with the Nightmare, the best part of it is that it makes, like, pissed off cheetah noises. It does not make the noises you think that a giant oil monster would make. It's like a...
It's not very, a gurgle.
It's not a gurgle, and it's not like a... or like a horn noise. It's like a... did it twice. Just for posterity, in case somebody didn't know. You know, there was a double Nightmare right there. But yeah, I actually played some more Prey. Because of course I did. Why would I play the games I need to play? instead, I'll just play Prey 5 times. Actually, because I had to... do it for a work reason. There's a work reason. Won't go into it, but there was a work reason, and I was back in the crew quarters and, you know, lovingly going over all of the different, you know, emails and the voice logs and the beautiful environment, and oh my god, it's gonna be really hard to pick anything over Prey in my game of the year. But that's even with Zelda, that's even with the possibility of Mario, that's even, I haven't played Tacoma yet, it's even Nier. With Pyre being amazing, it's even with Nier being amazing, I still need to finish that. We'll see what happens. I don't sleep on Prey, and I don't care, even if Austin and Patrick are, like, neutral on Prey, they're not haters, but they're more neutral on it, I'm just like, no. No, guys, it's
Prey is good.
Amazing.
Prey is amazing.
Fantastic. You should play Prey.
I should play Prey. I'm fascinated by this shape-shifting idea.
Yeah.
Because I really don't know anything about Prey. Because I'm more of a person who, like, likes to know absolutely nothing going into a game.
Good.
Especially one that's, like, very, very big. Which actually makes not much sense.
No, it does. It's big, and I think it's actually fairly dense.
Yeah.
More than it's, like, massive.
Yeah.
There's just a lot going on inside the space station.
Yeah, so. Like, I feel like if something that's, like, a short, small game is, like, spoiled for me, I'm like, oh, I would have gotten there in a couple hours. But if it's, like, I'm putting you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 hours into a game and the end is spoiled, I'm much more likely to be devastated.
Yeah, exactly. It's an investment at that point.
So,
I also played a whole lot of Lego Worlds, which I was shocked by how much I was so into it. Now, it shouldn't be shocking. I loved Legos growing up. I was, like, love is actually too mild of a word. I was, like, a Lego obsessive. I built, like, massive room-scale models of things with, yeah, it was pretty crazy, to be honest. I wrote about this a little bit.
The description in your piece of, like, building Disneyland?
All of Walt Disney World.
Oh, my Lord.
I mean, it wasn't literally every single attraction, but every land and every world was represented.
Beautiful.
Like, it was, our entire playroom was this, I was 11. I don't know if that helps or hurts in this description, but it was the full playroom. And it had two monorail systems. It had three theme parks. It had hotels. It had boat systems. It was intricate and large, and I was obsessed. So anyway, the fact that I'm obsessed with a Lego game that's actually about building and about making your own worlds and about kind of making your own fun, it shouldn't be shocking that I was this into it. But it's a really good building game. It's like a really, really good, really well done. I was saying, like, if you want the meats, it's very much Minecraft meets Scribblenauts, and if you played Scribblenauts, you should know how awesome that is. And that's because all the little characters and animals have scripting attached to them. So they'll act, they'll behave in certain ways. The example I gave is I spawned a bunch of warrior women on the moon, and they ran around and they were like flexing and having a little party. And there was a little explorer dude who's like a 30s explorer Lego guy. I put him in a room with a rock monster. The rock monster ate him. It was great. So there was all that little like sandboxy exploration kind of stuff where you can just throw things together and see what they do. And of course, the main fun of this is actually building things. And yeah, and you can build, I didn't know this until going into it, but you can build things brick by brick. You have an infinite array of bricks, every color, every shape, and you can put them together one by one if you want, or you can copy structures, like massive structures,
yeah,
build on top of that, change it however you want. It's amazing. So
yeah, I was gonna ask, like, is that good? Because I remember the brick by brick construction was used in Lego Universe, I don't know, some MMO,
sure,
where like the main action was very like Lego platformer, except even simpler because you're on a server. But then you could also go to your like little realm, your little like Lego space, and like build whatever you wanted. And trying to like build Legos in a like with a mouse and keyboard and trying to like get the pieces to go, like, it sucked. Like, you know, on some level, I knew like I could be having, like, obviously I could build cool things with this. But it was really awful. It was shitty.
Sure.
Like, I think if there had been other controls, it would have been better. Did they solve that at all here? Like, have they made, like, playing with Legos on a screen fun?
Yes, at least for me. And I was playing on the PS4. So I was using a controller to do this. And things snap really nicely. There's sort of, like, a grid option that's already... Everything kind of automatically snaps to this. And then you can kind of... say I was building, like, a little wall, just to make it very simple. Everything kind of already aligns to a little grid. And if I want to put the next thing on, I just sort of click the stick a tiny bit and it automatically is like nicely in place where you kind of want it.
Yeah.
And if you want to go one level up, you just use the D-pad one level up. It's really nice and intuitive, actually. I spent more time than I thought I would doing the one piece building things just to kind of, you know, fuck with the interface a bit, just to kind of play around. And also because I enjoyed that so much when I was younger. And obviously it's never going to be as satisfying in a tactile sense as actually having those little bits of plastic and actually kind of putting them together with your hands. I don't think anything's ever going to do that until we have holodecks, which we totally will, right? And I'll play Lego Dimensions on a holodeck. Yeah. Lego World, sorry, excuse me, on a holodeck. But it kind of makes up for that, I think, with the scripting and the fact that these worlds are animated and there's always, like, when you're flying the little spaceship, I should say that I played this largely because there's a new DLC out and it's the classic space from the 70s and 80s with the little spacemen and the little aliens and really cool little spaceships. So when you're flying these little spaceships, there's actually, like, a fire effect and it's little... little Lego blocks that look like fire are constantly, like, sort of coming out. So it has all this spirit and has all this sort of fun of those games and that sort of aspect of it where it's actually animated, it's actually responding, it's actually scripted in such a way that the little creatures and things respond appropriately. is really awesome and really great. And I am going to keep playing this game because it's my dream to build a beautiful cyberpunk dystopia in LEGO Worlds. I think that, you know, it's an unreasonable goal, especially because I can't seem to beat the games I need to beat. But I really love it. And I was just pleasantly surprised. I will say on the negative side, the camera sucks. It's a 3D, it's a wildly ambitious 3D game with, you know, building, and the camera is a little wonky. And there was a save bug that made me very angry. I had to do all the tutorials over again, and they're lovely, but Jesus.
No one wants to do a tutorial twice.
No, nobody does.
That's a one time.
It's a one time. It's a, you're dealing with the one time kind of thing. So there's some issues with it, but I really like it, and I really think it's worth those little kind of, just, you know, little nitpicks, I think. So yeah, I think unless anybody has anything else they deeply need to express, you can forever hold your peace, because we're going to the question bucket, baby. Natalie, let's give me a number between one and, we're actually getting through this. We're getting through this pretty well. It's 1 and like 50, 57. It looks like Heinz 57. Beautiful. So 1 and 57.
Let's go to, 3.
Number 3 is a good number. That was my basketball number when I was a little kid. You like all these little Danielle stories that I tell, you know, while I'm scrolling through a thing. Okay, this is an anonymous one.
Snart.
Oh, God, there's a whole lot of letters and numbers here. Here we go. Ready? Anonymous. I've been mulling over this for a while, but I figured it'd be an interesting topic for a deep dive. I've been playing Beatmania 2DX for quite some time, but I've been worried about the future of the game. If you're not familiar with it, it's a reasonably challenging music and rhythm game. There's a link here. The main distinction for most music and rhythm games is that it is key-sounded. This means button presses correspond to individual notes and sound samples. So failing to press keys means pieces of a song are missing, or pressing extra keys means you get a bunch of extra garbage from what you pressed. TLDR version. How do I approach trying to keep interest, community alive for a game when the only real viable route is piracy? And the more visible is more likely to work towards eliminating the community that helps grow it. There's some more here. I think, yes, they gave me the TLDR version before all of the details, but I'll do a little bit more.
Okay.
And then we can address. Yeah. While a series fading away over time isn't particularly noteworthy, the circumstances here are. Firstly, this is one of the few games Konami continues to develop and publish. Localization tests for 2DX24 happened in Japan in July 2016. The last home release is 2DX16 in 2008 on the PS2. There's obviously enough of a Japanese audience to continue the series, but as I don't read or speak Japanese, that puts me in the same boat as a majority of the community. Piracy. This is where the piracy came in. We got a little buried in the lead problem here, but it's all
okay.
Right.
We're here.
I'd go for a legitimate option if one was available. The controllers in that video run $500 each, but Konami doesn't seem to have any plans of releasing outside of Japan. There may also be some sort of hang-up with music rights. Just look at the bizarre streaming requirements on some originally published in Japan games. The way folks end up with the game at this point is either a simulator, a program that approximates the game and runs sim fees for that program, such as Stepmania for DDR, or an emulated arcade environment, dumping the hard drive contents of an arcade machine and setting up a fake environment to run them. Okay, so I think we get the story at this point. Sorry that the TLDR was a little high up there. But it seems like the main thing here is this person really loves this game. This is incredibly hard to actually find legitimately. And is piracy okay in this situation?
Well, I'm not sure what we're allowed to actually say.
Exactly.
You can't, legal. Officially condone.
Legal?
Okay, let's...
Let's say, hypothetically speaking, with no legal troubles whatsoever, that's how we're going
to
answer
no
this.
With no intent to actually replicate this in real life.
Yes, exactly.
This is the if I did it, here's how of video game preservation and piracy. Look, I think it's a real problem in just legacy gaming in video game preservation that legal methods cause things to be lost forever.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, the people doing the preserving are also the people breaking copyright and pirating and ripping. And that is a real contradiction and a real problem for the medium. And in general, my own personal inclination is I like things to be preserved. I like them to be shared around and kept available for people who maybe arrived too late to the original party. And so in general, like, I'm all for efforts to keep these things around and alive. But at the same time, there are limits to how far you can take that.
Yeah.
That sounds really good and fair.
That sounds very good and fair.
Rob, since you gave such a good and fair answer there, how about you pick up the next number here?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Let's do three. Sorry, I saw Corvo.
I mean, we can do three again. There's question here.
Yeah.
You know, we're playing threes. It's fine. Playing threes. This one comes from Craig.
Craig.
Yeah, Craig. I just did like a real excited question for you. Thank you. He wrote the question bucket, says question for you. We're already in a good place with Craig. Question for you. Which was spurred on by your discussion on Friday about Corvo and Dishonored. It might be an older one, all right? Is this from Friday? A Friday, okay? I find the structure of narrative for games to be fascinating. One of the most interesting structure choices for me is whether or not to voice the main character. Many games, like Dishonored 1, by the way, you didn't miss much. Yeah. It's just a question of whether or not to voice the main character. Okay, cool. Like Dishonored 1, yes.
Skype command?
Yeah, that's good.
That's very good.
The chat is reacting positively to our technical difficulties if you're listening to this not on Skype. On Twitch. Many games, like Dishonored 1 and Dragon Age Origins, present you with a silent player character and rely on your imagination to fill in the blanks of dialogue and have the true story be shaped by a colorful supporting cast and environment, while others, like Dishonored 2 and Dragon Age 2, depend on a strong central figure and a speaking role to drive the story home with perhaps more muted supporting elements. Obviously, this changes the way the user interacts with the main character and story on a cognitive level. You have a preference to these two types of storytelling. What do you think are the positives and negatives of each style? Enjoying the new pod so far and looking forward to what the new site design has to offer. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you, Craig. Do you have a preference, Natalie? Do you have a specific, do you prefer games with that sort of silent protagonist or is it situational?
I think it depends for me on the type of game. Sure. If it's a game that's, you know, where I'm really, like, meant to forge my own path, I find it kind of, I think my thing with Dragon Age, I know Dragon Age Inquisition the best, so I will use that, but with Dragon Age Inquisition, the fact that, like, there were, like, dialogue choices that I made, and then the dialogue that actually occurred wasn't exactly the dialogue choice I made, like, it was somehow a little bit different. I think of, like, maybe it's, like, an intonation, or maybe it's, like, a, just, like, the wording is, it's, like, kind of the same, but it's a little bit different, and I was always very kind of put off by those, because I felt like that my intentions were, like, mishandled, and, like, what I really wanted to say, and what I clicked on and decided to say was, like, still kind of manipulated for me. And I think if the point is, like, this is supposed to be some sort of game, or this is supposed to be a game where, like, the ending is up to you, and anything can happen, and you can forge your own path, then yes, let me forge my own path, and don't speak for me. Like, let me speak, like, as one-to-one through the character as possible. But in games where you're following a narrative, I think of,
like a cinematic kind of,
yeah, like like an Uncharted. Like Nathan Drake is a character who has a life.
I mean, dude has a life.
Nathan
has a beautiful girlfriend. You know, he gets around the world. He's got a life.
Exactly.
That's right.
But the Inquisitor, like the fact that like even the how you reference the character, the fact that you name the Inquisitor whatever you want, the fact that like you're allowed to kind of place yourself, or that you're encouraged to place yourself within that world, then yeah, let me be in the world one-to-one.
Sure. Yeah. Rob, do you have a preference, or is it also sort of more situational for you?
Yeah, I think Natalie's largely kind of nailed the things that I want from this as well. Like, where I start to get really frustrated is where the game is trying to give me some illusion of choice, but it can't map, like, the options it's presenting don't map to the things that I remotely want or identify with, or even not even necessarily, like, don't match with my sense of the character. Like, I am especially not a fan of when you're given an A, B, or C dialogue option, and then you're like, well, B seems like a, you know, B says one thing, and then your character has an interpretation of B, basically, mm-hmm. where it's sort of like the Cole Phelps problem in L.A. Noire, yeah. I think was the closest, the worst I've seen this, but it happens in other dialogue systems as well, where it's like B is like, you know, middle of the road option, or express some doubt about what this person is telling you, or lightly disagree. And you say, okay, this seems like a place where I'd push back on that a little bit. And then you like hit B, and tables are being flipped. And you're like, whoa, that's not what I wanted at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the big thing for me. In general, I probably do prefer speaking characters. I don't feel the need to. Most of the time, I'm more into having a character that exists that I can sort of like read like a normal character.
Like a normal character.
That was extremely well timed.
It was.
And anyway, that's how you do video game narrative in a satisfying and consistent manner.
He's solving the problems today. This is amazing. I'm really glad you're sharing this wisdom with us. I was going to actually bring up Cole Phelps in my answer as well, saying that the stronger a character is, or the more, you know, sort of personality is put into a character, the more you run the risk of also making a shitty character or somebody that you will completely not identify with, like an Aiden Pierce from the first Watch Dogs, or Cole Phelps, who I actually really, really like. L.A. Noire, I think, has some massive issues, but I really like that game, and I like disliking the main character. It's a weird thing where I feel like I'm both embodying this main character, and he's just such a turd burglar. He's just like such a milquetoast, like, oh, I'm a cop, and he's awful. But it's interesting, and it actually tied into my enjoyment of the game, where it's like, at least the way it ends is very like definitive about what happened to Mr. Turdburger. You know,
actually, just L.A. Noire, real quick, I think is an interesting case, because that's an example of, because people are, I think, go into these games with the expectation that somehow they are the main character, or that this main character will somehow reflect their values. And I think one of the real problems in L.A. Noire is that ultimately what you realize by the end of the story is that Cole Phelps was never the hero. And he's always been a fraud. Like, going back to his war hero days, like, the entire story of that game is, this is a guy who is faking it till he makes it in one situation after another, and has literally never been good at any of these jobs.
Yep.
He's just someone who fits the image of someone you might think would be good at this job. Like, L.A. Noire is, like, white privilege failing upwards. The video game.
Yeah, for exactly. Sure. And fact that it takes place, sorry, just because he's a cop, it adds to it for me, at least. That certainly does.
Yeah, and so I think L.A. Noire might have been more successful than I initially gave it credit for being, but it showed its hand so late that by that point, I had already sort of reached the conclusion that, like, whoa, this Cole Phelps is not doing at all what I want this character to be doing. And I didn't realize that, oh no, he actually is just a fuck-up.
Yeah. That's one thing I really respect about that game, whether it was 100% intentional or not.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible to read that as like, no, they I thought he was all right, but he's a tragic hero kind of thing. And I much prefer it the other way, but yeah. I also was going to mention Uncharted, and that the reason to play those games is how much fun and how much personality those characters have. Yeah. Chloe's way better than Nathan Drake. I'm just going to say that. And all right, I just need one more number. Just shout it out. Both of you shout out a number. Shout a number.
Three. I was waiting.
And we got three again.
Three for three,
baby. Here we go.
This three is, questions, number three, yeah, threes.
I think this is perfect. You know, it was beautiful. This is from Joey in Memphis.
Joey.
All right, Joey. Thank you, Joey. My question. In recent years, there's been a noticeable trend of game devaluation for indie games, where games on PS Plus, Xbox Live Gold, and Humble Bundle, plus other bundle sites, have left gamers with a sense of wait for a bundle before you buy, or with the first thought of a game being it's going to end up in a bundle eventually, so don't buy. Even I have found myself holding off on indie games because I know the price will eventually fall down to pennies, which has left my Steam library at 500 plus games. Although in recent months I found myself having to make the conscious decision and breaking that mindset, possibly due to the prevalence of Kickstarter or Patreon, with saying I need to support this work because it has a huge effort and the dev put their heart and soul into it. With this shift in mindset of games devaluation, has it been a help to the industry and small indie devs out there, or has it been a detriment and a race towards the bottom for many games? How can indie devs tackle this mindset and bring about a much larger cultural change of raising their prices back to a point where there's a fair price for a fair game? Best regards, Joey. This is a really good question, because I think Joey's right. I think Joey's very, very correct in saying there's been a devaluation, and I think it's something we've talked about a little bit on our other podcast at the weekend. You should listen to it. It's a great podcast. but a little
Are
bit
you telling
about,
your friends?
Yeah, and I'm just yeah. telling our friends at the weekend. Really good. About you know, how much Steam has really played a part in this. And not just Steam, obviously the bundle sites sort of work with Steam a lot of times in this sort of stuff, but there really has been this incredible plummet, which is obviously on one side great to be able to have so many great games for a low price, especially if you are not a rich person with a massive income. And, oh, my God, I can actually play all these things I've heard good things about.
And they're going to charity.
And a lot of them are going to charity, which is rad. But, of course, we also want game developers, especially indies who may not be making a massive living, to be able to eat and put food on the table and have health insurance and things that we need for life. So
exactly.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm gonna ask both of you to continue on this. Those are the two sides of the coin. Where do we fall, perhaps?
I mean,
Rob, you've been fixing all the problems, so yeah.
This is a really complicated topic because it's one of those things where the market forces are so strong that it feels like any prescriptive recommendation you make would be kind of meaningless and probably ill-advised as well. I am fully in favor of people being able to support themselves off their creative output. I do worry that this race to the bottom that's been going on for years has really pushed things to a dangerous level if you're not somebody who's lucky enough to enjoy really significant profile in the games industry. So I think that's probably who's going to be hit the most. This affects everybody. But if you're somebody who's relying on word of mouth more than an initial launch push, I'm sure this is a problem for Tacoma, for instance, but I'm not sure it's as much a problem for Tacoma as it would be for a smaller indie studio that's new to the market these days. Tacoma gets to have a cool launch window where it's dominating the conversation. If you're trying to work up to that and people are discovering your game through these it's on sale for $5 this weekend, or it's in a bundle where if you pay 75 cents more than the average, you get 12 extra games. I don't know what you do with that.
Yeah. I will say it's a problem that I sympathize with so much. And I think we all do on the journalistic side as well, where it's just what are people going to pay attention to today, and trying to understand what the needs are of people who will read about games versus, you know, what people want to play. I've had this discussion with a lot of my friends who are indie devs where it's like, it's almost as if, oh, we're in the same business. Who gets the most attention? Who actually has a platform for either sort of showcasing work or, you know, showcasing the right kind of work that will get more attention? It's like a very tenuous and difficult thing to contend with on either side in a crowded marketplace.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like the saturation of games and just content on Steam. As an indie developer who may not have like the advertising campaign of a game like Tacoma, where it's not only is it like highly anticipated, but it's being highly talked about, and whether that's like a campaign or whether that's just people are very excited for that game, I don't know. But like, as a game develop or aspiring game developer myself, like I can see the benefit of, you know, Steam or Humble Bundle picking my game out for me.
Right.
And, like, putting it into people's spheres, like, people's vicinity. Yet, at, like, my expense, kind of, but also my benefit, like, I don't know. It depends what the end game is. It depends what we, like, where we end up at. Am I, you know, is my one game in this, like, 20-game Humble Bundle, like, going to be recognized, or is it going to get lost? And what's probably going to happen is it's going to get lost. I have a similar problem with my Steam library where I have lots of games and I don't realistically have the time to play them all. And realistically, I look at some of these titles and I'm like, when did I buy this? What is this game?
Sure.
And
why the fuck do I have Binary Domain in my library?
what is this doing here?
Yeah, so I think it's just, I don't know, because it's like, it's also like an integrity question, and it's also like a financial question, and it has a lot to do with like how we value ourselves in a monetary way and also in like our creative value way, and that's very hard to grapple with, I think.
Yeah, I think especially for the way we lean politically at Waypoint, generally, we're all like, God, why are they asking dirty communists to make, you know, like pronouncements on our capitalistic system of how we buy and sell games and how we make games and you know, the cost of labor and all of that stuff. I am not qualified to talk about that. And Rob just hung up on us. He can't even deal. It's all right. But yeah, I think the other side of this question is what it sounds to me like Joey's also doing a what can I do? I've looked at the Patreon model. I've looked at like, oh, I'm paying full price for this game because I really believe in it. And
yeah,
and that sort of thing, which seems like, okay, a thing people can do, certainly. But it's also, it's difficult to tell people to do that because I don't think a lot of folks have a ton of disposable income, too. So there's that side of it as well. So
yeah, and then there's like the option or the idea that like, with a Kickstarter, if it doesn't hit the goal,
where did all that labor go?
Yeah and for sure. That sucks.
Sure does. Yeah, we should get a capitalism command. People are saying that in the chat. I think that would be very good. I'm going to just read Turbo Tango's comment here because I feel like this is a good way to close this letter. Waypoint, come for the dirty communism, stay for the reasoned, restrained commentary on mixed media capitalism in a society with highly constrained leisure time .zone. Yeah, thank you for understanding us so well, Turbo Tango. I really appreciate that, and that makes me very happy. So I think we're going to start closing out. Natalie, thank you so much for both doing the podcast and also like pinch hitting our stream, and also every time Rob Skype decides to have a tantrum.
I'm so sorry,
you're
Rob.
Going back.
I really don't know what's happening. I'm very confused.
You're doing good. You know,
apologies to the stream viewers because yes, this is a new and novel way for our setup to fail. So
every day there's something new.
So many sorries. I'm very sorry. I'm going to troubleshoot this immediately.
Sorry, it's not your fault. Natalie, where can people find you online?
People can find me at Natalie Watson on Twitter.
Awesome. Rob, how about you?
At Rob Zachney.
Oh, that's very fantastic. I'm Danielle R.I., and I want to shout out our new producer, Rob. Do you have a Twitter, Rob?
Yeah.
What's your Twitter?
Rob, the letter K, Schulte, S-C-H-U-L-T-E.
There we go. Well, Rob is producing. Thank you so much, Rob, for producing. And shout-outs to Bowen, who allows us to use his track, Miss You, off the EP Pale Machine. I didn't even look. I want that to go on the record. I just knew that. Please come to our website. Please read our articles. Here's a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff. We sure would appreciate you reading our articles. That helps us out so much, and it really is an awesome thing for you to do because we pour our hearts and souls, our work, our labor, our product, the sweat of our brows. That all goes on waypoint.vice.com, you know. I think there is actually a communism.zone or something in there, communist commentary.zone, discourse something.
Oh, did cultural marxism.club?
That's it. Cultural marxism.club will get you there too. And of course on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook, Waypoint Vice, and on YouTube, Waypoint Vice. Thank you all so, so much. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate you being awesome and patient with us as we had some technical difficulties. And we appreciate Austin, who is now in a meeting, making big decisions. So thank you, everybody. And I will say what I always say to the people. Be good or be good at it.